There has always been a special weight to ministry, but research is showing that for over half of pastors right now, they're feeling the demands of ministry so much so that they are saying it's more than they can handle. And this is prompting many pastors to leave the ministry. So how does a pastor persevere and have a resilient life and ministry in this age? Well, we're going to talk about it this morning with Mark Dance. Mark Dance served as a lead pastor and planter for 27 years before launching Lifeway Pastors, the Care for Pastors Network, and Oklahoma Ministry Pipeline. He currently serves as the director of pastoral wellness for Guidestone Financial Resources, and he has written a book titled Start to Finish. And good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
Yeah, appreciate you joining us, Mark. I'm looking forward to this conversation. So in your years of experience, Mark, what are some of the reasons why you've seen and are seeing pastors leaving the ministry?
Well, they've been leaving the ministry at a much less rate than what's been predicted, right? So many predicted that they were going to bail out because of COVID and all its complications. And I'm encouraged that they have not quit in any greater rate. That being said, I don't think any of the challenges are that new. You have some of the, obviously we don't have pandemics all the time, and we don't have strong political, social overlap and tensions. However, the biggest challenges to a pastor's leadership, and probably the biggest reason they leave, is first of all, inability to lead themselves. I mean, we are probably our greatest obstacle, and so which is why Scripture teaches us that we have to pay close attention to our lives as well as to our flock and to our doctrine. First Timothy 4 says it this way: pay close attention to your life and your teaching, and persevere in these things. And doing this, you save not only yourself, but also your hearers. And so I think the biggest challenge and the biggest reason that pastors do leave the ministry or seriously consider leaving the ministry is because of some of the personal challenges that they have, even before they leave their family and their ministry, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So, Mark, have you had an experience with burnout as a pastor? And if so, what did that look like?
You know, 20 years into pastoring churches, I did experience the season of what my family doctor called clinical depression, which I was familiar with because I took a counseling class at seminary, but it didn't make me a counselor, you know. I also took a music class that made the theology students take that. It didn't make me a music minister, and so I asked for help, which is counterintuitive for pastors because I was different. I was kind of stuck, and I couldn't really understand it, explain it. And so he asked me several questions that doctors ask, and he diagnosed me. A week later, a licensed therapist in our church diagnosed me from the pew. She made an appointment, came by, and asked me only two questions. Do you know you're clinically depressed, and are you taking anything for it? And I said, yes, ma'am, I do. I just found out last week, and I don't know if it works. I picked it up Wednesday, you know. So I've been pastoring for 20 years and was in the middle of a relocation, and it just basically overspent, ignored the Sabbath, ignored any form of self-care, and kind of used the God card to excuse that. Just ran out of gas, which is what they called serotonin, you know, and needed to make some changes. And I did. I listened to both the doctor and the therapist, and they came together, as well as a few leaders, and helped me get healthy again. And that was almost 15 years ago. So there's no secret sauce here other than pastors are not proficient in every profession, nor are we expected to be. But we are surrounded. God does put people in our lives that will help us with the different areas that were, you know, some it's mental health, for some it's physical health, for some it's relational health, or, you know, spiritual health. We all, disciple makers, need to be discipled like everyone else. It might be financial health, but there are people around us that are more proficient. It may be some of these things. And so it just takes a little humility to say, hey, you know what? I need some help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's important.
Yeah. And I was just going to say, so what would you say, what would you suggest are some of the first things, you know, a pastor should do if they're feeling like they need some help? You know, they need to, they realize they can't do it all and be the all end all of everything. What are some things you would tell a pastor of how to start that process?
Yeah, well, first of all, get a vision of how you want to finish your ministry race. That's why I called this book Start to Finish, because, you know, I don't want to just fall across the finish line. Nobody does.
Right.
And you know, we started this conversation talking about those who might quit, not even make it through or disqualify.
Yeah.
But what do you want your last chapter of ministry to look like, even after vocational ministry, you know, to and through retirement? And then you can set your goals based on that, because some of our choices will be limited by decisions that we're making now. So if you're experiencing, for example, financial challenge, I work at Guidestones and Ministry of Southern Baptist Convention, and we help with retirement and insurance. So we try to help them get ready to finish someday.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're talking 20 and 30 year olds thinking about what life's going to be like in their 70s and 80s. And yeah, that's a big reach, but what you do in that last lap or two has a lot to do with what you're doing now, how you steward your physical health and your financial health, as well as your relational health, right? Because,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I miss, you know, basically, I can't blame anybody else for my depression. I wasn't born with it, didn't inherit it. There's all kinds of depression out there. The big thing is don't self-diagnose, right?
Yeah.
Or, you know, again, you're not going to outsmart your doctor or therapist or whatever. Just so don't self-diagnose. Don't try to figure it out alone, because ministry is way too hard to try to do alone. But we're part of the interdependent body of Christ. And so sometimes we just have to humbly say, you know, God's given me a couple of gifts, and I want to focus on those. But he's put people around me that are also gifted. And so I'm going to let them help me in areas that I'm not good at and probably won't be good at, but I'm responsible for. So I'm going to own the responsibility for those things, but I'm going to let people help me.
Hmm. Yeah. It seems to me, Mark, that it sounds like the congregation can be a real help to their pastor, too, in just letting him know that you don't expect him to to be proficient,
yeah,
in everything. Because I think sometimes, don't you think that sometimes as a congregation, we feel like the pastor should be the first person to call as a response to any problem a person has?
Yeah. Well, I think that you're right. I mean, our people would love to help us, and we're actually signaling to them if we've got a hero complex and we talk about being available 24/7, which is patently unbiblical, you know, it's breaking the fourth commandment, you know, about Sabbath. And anyway, if we set ourselves up for that, we can't blame them. We have to say, hey, you know what? I want to be a little more transparent than that. And honestly, when I shared with them about my diagnosis for clinical depression, I wasn't afraid of being fired. I was afraid of being pitied, because, you know, for everyone with a Y chromosome, that's our number one need is respect. And I just didn't want little old ladies pat me on the hand saying, are you going to be okay? You know, I want to be the strong guy. But the most endearing years of ministry followed that, because I became real to them and accessible and vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and I
good.
Let them love me. And I was part of the family. I wasn't just the leader of it.
Yeah, I love that. There's a lesson there for every part of the family,
yeah,
actually.
That's right.
It's really
good.
Yeah.
Right.
So, Mark, in your book, you have at least four chapters that deal with neighbors or neighborhood. Why is that so important? What are you talking about there?
You know, be honest, Ken, I'm old school. This whole book's based on two simple commands, and those are the two commands, great commandments. And that simplifies my life and my ministry and everything else. So the second part of the book's on the second command to love your neighbors. And that's just basically God's pecking order. Neighbor means nearest one. So in my life, that's the next pillow. That's Janet. That's my second love.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the first commandment's about my first love. Second commandment, there's Janet, and then the kids for 20 years before they became squatters. And then my parents, you know, they need us now more than our kids do. Mm-hmm. And you know, Jesus, he took that second command from Leviticus 19. So Moses, God authored it, but God, you know, Moses wrote both the first and the second commands, just in different places. And in Leviticus 19, we see love your neighbor for the first time, but we also see the application is to the parents. It's not just the people on the other side of the world, although it does eventually go there, as he bears out in Luke's version of the great commandment, where he introduces the parable of the Good Samaritan. But neighbor, just concentric circle-wise, goes from the dance family, in my case, to the people right next door in my neighborhood, and the people I work with, and the people I play tennis and I bow hunt with. I mean, these are the it's a pecking order, because even though everyone's equal in God's eyes, we're not God. He's like, hey, I have a pecking order where it's like, I'm first, your second covenant is marriage, if you're married, and you take care of your family, or you're worse than an unbeliever, you know,
mm-hmm.
and then love the people you live with and you work with. And so the second part of the book focuses on fleshing out in a very practical way the relationships that pastors, ministers, missionaries need to prioritize, because people will cut in line. They won't try to blow up your family or ministry, but they will. Their emergencies, they want what they want when they want it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the people listening to this that are serving in pastoral ministry will recognize the fact that our church members aren't great at defining what an emergency is.
That's
so
right.
That, sometimes we have to demote people. Every day we have to demote people. I mean, when we had kids, we had to demote them to make sure that they weren't more important than Janet, make sure Janet's not more important than Jesus. And then, you know, even when I got married, I had to break up with my parents if I did it right, according to Genesis 2.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody kind of is like, you know, you're important and I'll get to you, but it might be later. And so prioritizing your relationships is what really, I think, both the great commandments lead us to do.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So to follow up on that a little bit, to prioritize the relationships, I mean, do you come right out and tell your friends and everybody and say, look, it's not that I don't feel like you're important, but I need to prioritize some things, and this is what's going to happen first? Or is that something you recommend that they do? Just make it known.
Absolutely. It's actually a discipleship opportunity. When you say, I got your message last night, but I'm calling you today because I was with my family. Or, you know, I would have, I got your message this morning. I'll holler at you later. Right now, I'm preparing a message. When the very first emergency in the New Testament church was when the disciples stopped devoting themselves to prayer and the ministry of the word, and they were just reacting to everybody's needs. And they asked for help, like what I'm encouraging everybody here. They asked for help, and God sent the cavalry. Here came the deacons. Hey, we got this, Pastor. You go back to your core calling.
Yeah.
And so that was a discipleship opportunity to say, hey, it's not that the widows aren't important. This is more important.
Right.
So I've got to do this. I've got to do this first, and then I also need to share ministry with others.
Yeah.
Because I'm not the superhero. I'm not the hero of the church. Jesus is.
Yeah.
I'm just here to help you, equip you to do the work of ministry with me.
Yeah.
That's great.
That is good.
You know, that's really great perspective, and I think good for all of us to mm-hmm. hear that are involved in ministry. So, Mark, before I let you go, would you just speak to that pastor that maybe's just gone through a hard season. Need some encouragement this morning.
I'd love to. Thank you for asking. This is, I hope, these few minutes are a grace zone for you, not a guilt zone, not to make you feel worse, but actually give you permission to get some important margin in your life. By prioritizing those who fill you up, your first, second, third covenant, you know, you have the juice, the resilience to accelerate through the finish line. If you go by God's directives, it's not going to be more burdensome. It's going to be the opposite of that. And so I hope you're hearing this through the eyes and the ears of grace and not guilt.
That's good. Yeah, appreciate that, Mark. That is Mark Dance. He is the author of Start to Finish, The Pastor's Guide to Leading a Resilient Life in Ministry. Appreciate the time today, Mark.
Thank you, Ken. I appreciate the time with you and Deb as well.